Chapter 49, Bedbugs and the Gettysburg Address. Sidney Grice whistled three notes very softly.
I think this might be an opportune moment.
For what? I asked, and he clacked his teeth together.
For Miss Bocking to show us the evidence.
What evidence?
I looked at him and then at her.
Lucy hesitated. I know I should not have...
Then why did you?
He appeared to be miming the shuffling of a pack of cards. I had to be certain. Lucy stumbled over her words. I searched Freddy's room. She puffed her lips. I would never dream of doing such a thing normally.
Are you telling us that you dreamed of doing it abnormally?
He dealt us three imaginary cards, each onto an invisible table. I meant that I would not think of doing it under normal circumstances, she clarified, lifting a stray lock of hair back behind her ear. Why do you keep interrupting me?
Because I have yet to hear anything to which it is worth listening.
Mr. G turned his cards over expressionlessly. You have hardly given me a chance to speak yet, she complained.
You have been permitted to manufacture 10 sentences.
My guardian dealt himself another card.
Which is as many as so-called President Lincoln required 80 years ago for his address at the Soldiers' National Cemetery in Gettysburg.
Lucy had quite pointed ears, I noticed, and they had gone rather pink. What did you find, Lucy? I asked gently, and Lucy leaned backwards to open a drawer of her desk. This. She placed a red-backed book on the flat surface. May I? I picked it up and opened the first page. The diary was printed in gold lettering on the flyleaf, and on a glued-in plate was hand-printed, This book belongs to Frieda Wilde, and beneath that, If found, please return to Steep House, Abbey Road, London. All the pages were blackened around the edges. Was this rescued from the fire? I assume so. Lucy locked her fingers. This is the first I have known of it. Freddy never mentioned it.
If she had done so, Miss Bocking would be foolish indeed to have made her most recent assertion.
Mr. G collected all the cards from where he had dealt them in mid-air and came close to peer over my shoulder. I went to the 1st of January, and there was written in violet ink, aging into brown, a lovely crisp start to the year. It is the last entry that worries me. Lucy's voice had a slight tremor. I have bookmarked it.
For the benefit of idiot detectives,
Sidney Grice mumbled, but she did not react. Lucy Bocking's eyes were fixed on me as I went to the back of the diary. The final few pages were blank and crumbling to my touch, and the last entry was badly charred, but I could still make out the words. I hate Steep House and everybody in it. I shall destroy them all. I assume it is Freddy's handwriting, I said, and Mr. G boofed, for he hated anybody, especially me, to assume anything. I am positive, Lucy said. As you can see, I have a letter here that she wrote to me a few months before that. Lucy brought a folded sheet of notepaper from an envelope in a pigeonhole. The style is exactly the same. The way she dots her eyes with curved lines, for example. Lucy unfolded the sheet of paper and held it up for comparison. My dearest friend Lucy, I trust that you are keeping well. Things are much the same here, but we miss you dreadfully.
Close the book with exaggerated care, Sidney Grice instructed, and I obeyed, aware that, in his eyes, my extreme caution would just about match his most careless actions. Hold it out.
He took the diary from me as a monk might handle holy scripture.
Where precisely did you find it?
In the bottom of her linen chest, at the foot of her bed.
Front, back, left, right, middle?
The front left-hand corner underneath her petticoats.
I should very much like to see those,
my guardian declared. I shall not ask why. Lucy wrinkled her nose. Aelin can fetch them for you.
That will not do at all.
Mr. G. placed the book on a nearby table.
For I absolutely must see Miss Wilde's undergarments without delay. Describe how one might most conveniently gain entry to her room.
Not for the first time, Lucy gaped. On the first floor at the front of the house, on the right.
What a pity.
Mr. G. stood, legs akimbo.
I had a morbid fancy to turn left.
He pointed in the manner of Napoleon urging his army to one final effort. You could walk backwards, I suggested. And then, as he took one step in reverse, that was a joke.
I am sorry that Miss Middleton finds your predicament hilarious, my godfather said in all sincerity. I have tried to improve her manners, but when all is said and done, she is only a woman.
He raised his stick towards the ceiling.
Farewell, Miss Bocking. Unless I acquire a compelling motive for tarrying, we shall rendezvous here in 5 and a half minutes. Come, Miss Middleton. We are already 19 seconds behind schedule.
With that, he shouldered his cane and marched back into the hall, dipping to his left as if that were his shorter side.
You will not go into any other rooms? Lucy called after us.
Not unless I decide to,
he reassured her. Sidney Gryce had an ability which I have never come across in other men, that of running silently, neither a footfall nor a rustle of his clothes to be heard. The stairs were dog-legged, and he had raced to the half-landing before I was even on the first step. Lucy's voice chased after him.
But I do not want you to.
And your wish is my command,
my guardian yelled, and then more softly,
though I feel no compulsion to obey it.
He disappeared round the corner, only for his head to poke back round it and to whisper,
Mount the staircase one step at a time, and wait on each stair for 20 seconds before proceeding in an orderly fashion to the next.
He shot to the top.
Sing loudly,
he hissed over the banister rail,
but cease to do so when you place your huge foot upon the summit.
And before I could protest at yet another insult, Mr. G. was gone. With nobody to see, I hitched up my skirts an obscene 6 inches or so, and followed at the leisurely pace instructed. On the first step, I cleared my throat and let rip.
I'm only a cockney sparrow, I live in a chimney pot, my nest is sooty and narrow, but it keeps us nice and hot. My mate said he was never leaving, but now he's gone off with the flock, leaving this poor sparrow grieving, a hen without no.
It was only at this point that I remembered what the next word was and concluded, rather unconvincingly, with,
mate!
The second verse was decidedly risque, I recalled, and was relieved when Lucy called out,
Are you all right, March?
Yes, thank you. It is just that I am nervous of staircases today and have to sing to keep my courage up.
That must be embarrassing.
It is for Mr. Gryce, I reached the top. Especially when we have visitors.
There was a pretty rose-coloured runner pinned to the white-painted wood by gleaming brass rods and complementing the beautiful and very expensive William Morris Daisy wallpaper. And I wished my guardian would give me a free rein with his more austere decorations. The patterns were continued on the landing, lit by a stained-glass skylight at the top of the stairwell, and the sun coming from an open door on the right. Sidney Gryce was kneeling in a cornflower bedroom to the side of a white-painted chest, placed, as Lucy had described, at the foot of the bed.
Just in time.
He stretched out his cane and lifted the hinged lid, as if expecting something dangerous to leap out.
Safe,
he breathed, and shuffled on his knees towards it. The trunk was filled with neatly folded undergarments, and he lifted each one aside to lay it carefully on the bed. There was a long ivory chemise on the lowest layer, and he took it out to hold up to the light.
How delicate the needlework is,
he marvelled. Though I had never known him to show an interest in such things. He refolded the garment exactly along its creases again.
Hold out your hands.
He draped it over my arms.
What can you smell?
My senses, as my guardian never tired of telling me, were nothing like as highly attuned as his, and so I knew that he was testing me rather than seeking my opinion. Feeling more than a little uneasy at this intrusion into Freddy's personal possessions, I lowered my face to within an inch of her undergarment. Laundry soap and sandalwood. The strong, resinous aroma of the latter was unmistakable, the chest having been lined with it as a defence against bedbugs.
Excellent.
He clapped his hands twice, like a sultan summoning one of his harem slaves.
Comment upon the quality of hygiene of the interior of the chest.
I kneeled beside him, not wishing to be castigated for missing a speck of dust in a corner or the eye of a flea lodged in a seam. It looks clean enough, I pronounced uncertainly.
Enough for what?
Clean.
So your use of the adjective enough was superfluous?
Yes.
I see.
Mr. G looked disappointed at that admission as he laid the chemise back and repacked the box, making minuscule adjustments to the line of a crease or frill. He closed the lid with a sigh.
So what have we learned from this exercise?
That Freddy keeps her linen fresh and clean, I hazarded, and my godfather clicked his tongue.
Sometimes you say some very silly things,
he reproached me.
That was not one of those times.
It was always difficult to tell if he was trying to be nice. Shall we go down? Sidney Grice tugged at his scarred ear.
I fervently hope so, for I have no wish to languish here for the residue of my corporeal existence.
He got to his feet.
Come.
Muriel was on the landing, presumably having been sent to check on us. Mr. G strode to the maid and tipped her chin up with the side of his forefinger, his head bending to hers.
You have a blemish,
he breathed, as if he were making love to her,
which men, myself included, might describe as a freckle.
Oblivious to her blushes, he ran his middle finger down the side of her nose.
And it has increased in diameter by 120th of an imperial inch since fate threw us together.
He turned her head from side to side.
There are only 4 things which freckles should do, and 9 which they should not. And first amongst the latter category is to grow.
He released her with a sigh.
Tell your mistress to send you, at her own expense, to Mr. Green, the dermatologist at University College Hospital, on Tuesday, anti-meridian.
Yes, sir. Muriel looked at him in the same way I imagine young girls must have swooned at Lord Byron.
Go away now,
Sidney Grice told her sharply, and she hurried past us to another room.